You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
Man, I've hit a point, Chris, where I'm sick of good Catholics asking the question of what can I get away with?
Oh, yeah.
In so many areas of life, but I think the most common usually has to do with fasting and sexuality.
Yeah, okay. Fasting and sexuality. I think that would be true. I have done the fasting question. You know, what can you drink? Can you drink milk? How much milk can I drink? Can it have chocolate in the milk? Yes, the fasting question.
Ultimately the two come together, but it's...
I've asked the other question too at times in my life. I'm not going to be like, I've never asked the one about sex. There were definitely moments in my life, places where I thought, where's the line and how close can I get to it?
Yeah. So this show is actually asking a lot of those tough questions, but both inside of marriage and outside of marriage today.
What? I thought inside marriage, it was just all bets are off.
Everything's licit. No go, man. People's jaws are dropping. You know what's funny? I remember speaking at an event last summer, and there are a couple guys there who's like, no one's been willing to answer these questions. These are like uncharted territories. I'm like, okay, one, you're kind of creeping me out, but yes, I will go there. And we're going there today. So this might not be the show for little ones. Actually, it's not.
I will try to speak in very sort of euphemisms and veiled terms, whereas Timmery will come out and say it blatantly. How it's going to work. Yeah.
We'll see if we can make you blush, and we'll see for anyone on the live feeds, they'll get a kick out of it.
Sure.
Father Tim Grumbach, while you were away, actually, there was one moment where I said something just really blunt, and he's like, shaking his head, like nodding, like, okay, that is very true.
You know, Father Tim and I were conspiring on the social media that we need to get in studio together sometime. So if you ever need to go on vacation or get sick, we're ready. We're ready. Lock and load. It'll be our last episode, but it'll be great.
We'll have to think about that because usually it's a rule that we have male, female on here.
But I know.
Maybe we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, it'd be interesting.
Special treat. There's going to be too much testosterone in the room with the whole team then being male for the day.
Yeah, that would be something. Quite something.
Okay, so here's the question, and I've got to throw this out there. I am very frustrated because I, you know, have heard this very common, especially among people who, let's say, aren't Catholic, from all age ranges,
right.
A lot of fallen away Catholics or people who grew up and said, yeah, I remember my good Catholic friends. They're the ones who didn't have sex, but, and I just heard this the other day, they did everything but.
Right. And I think this is just poor catechesis. And honestly, it's well-intentioned parents and youth ministers, but then they don't want to get into the uncomfortable conversation, you know? And so, yeah, the mindset of, and I remember, I think as a teenager, I thought that was being a good Catholic teen. It was everything but sex was okay. Cause I'd never had that conversation. And so where is the line? How far is too far? That's the way teens say it all the time. And I always like to say to people, you need to draw a line. You need to know where your line is. And you know, your line can't be sex. Because the reality is, you know, once you start heading down that road, once you start revving the engine, the natural end to that is that you would have a sexual encounter. And so it's an unnatural thing at any point then to stop it. And your body's conspiring against you because you're releasing hormones, all this stuff's happening. And so you've stepped out of the rational mind, which isn't even fully developed until you're an adult, and you're completely being kind of driven by that hormonal kind of rush. So how far is too far? Well, if you're living outside of marriage, I think anything you're doing, if you're doing it intentionally to rev the engine, to create arousal on your part or the part of the other person, or if it's leading to arousal on the part of your part of the other person, then that's too far. That's a hard line to draw.
That's a hard line to draw because it's much sooner than most people think. And I know I've heard this so many times. I went to a very small Catholic university. I heard people all the time, well, I'm a good Catholic girl. And there was a line that they always held, no sex. But I can tell you, I've counseled many a broken young girls who thought everything but was okay, but she didn't feel so good that night or that morning after.
Right. And again, you know, so where is that line? Well, again, can you hold hands with someone? Yeah, you probably hold hands with someone. You know, can you kiss someone? Yeah, you could probably kiss someone you're dating. I would say you're dating. Can you have like a session where you just mac on each other for 40 minutes? Probably not.
You're starting to make things quite difficult. And I mean, also,
is that a term that people would get nowadays? I say that from a mac on, like, you know, when people are just making out, like just
going at it.
Yes. I don't know if that's it. Anyway, but yeah, mac on it. Like, okay, that's okay. Now we're definitely entering a point where, okay, what? Why? What's the, it's clearly the physical has become the dominant force here.
No, I was speaking at a conference this summer and my brother happened to be there. And I actually gave one of the talks talking about the hormones and chemicals of sex.
Yeah.
And he came up to me after, oh, so I'm not going to hold my girlfriend's hand anymore. And I'm like, I'm not saying that. I'm just making sure that everyone understands that there are things taking place at a hormonal chemical cocktail level when we hug, when we have close contact with each other. And that can continue to make circumstances difficult.
Right.
And if you have the line of only don't have sex, well, that's going to be very, very challenging to live up to.
Right. You've been chemically bonding to that person. And again, you think about what's the purpose of dating? Well, ultimately, I mean, it depends on where you are in your stage of life. High school, most high schoolers aren't going to be able to get married at that point. So you're not actively discerning marriage in high school, but you're learning about the person you will one day want to marry, mm-hmm. right? You're learning about what a good relationship is, how you want to be treated, how you're going to treat other people. And so in high school, you're going to date and break up on a pretty regular basis. And most of the time. And so the reality is, why would you then create these chemical bonds? Why would you then put yourself in a position where you're limiting your ability to really see clearly? You know what I mean? Why would you then put yourself in a position where you are now evaluating things on drugs? The drugs your brain made, but you're basically putting yourself on drugs in your ability to evaluate whether or not this is healthy long term, whether or not you should be in it. And that's when you hear things about, well, I know they're not a good person, or I know I shouldn't be doing this, but I love him or I love her. Well, no, it's maybe you do, or maybe you're on drugs.
That's Chris Mueller.
Your brain strikes.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmy Millington. You're listening to Trending. It's true, though, Chris, when you're saying this, especially because I've seen this in the crisis pregnancy centers, where not just in a, I know the guy's not good for me, I shouldn't be dating him, where there's a woman who is literally physically being beaten by her significant other.
Right.
And she will not physically remove herself and maybe any children from the circumstance because she's got the cocktail eyes on. She's got that chemical cocktail going on in her head, which is meant for marriage. It's meant to help bond you to your spouse,
right,
to help you in overcoming some of those difficulties. Not only are we supposed to take control with our mind in overcoming our brokenness and the other person's, but we're also called to have the gift of sexuality to allow hormones and chemicals in our bodies to help us put blinders on, to help overlook the other person's faults.
Right, absolutely. You know, and then you look at the way we form. I realize that listening to the show, actually, that I say absolutely a lot. So I'm gonna intentionally try not to say absolutely anymore this episode, even though I just said it five times. Anyway, but you look at the way the brain works and how we form habits. And again, if you're getting these powerful hormones that come in as a reward system, right, or that bond us, and then you begin to form these neural pathways where you're literally hardwiring behavior or your response system. So you're in an abusive situation, or you're with someone who doesn't treat you the way they should treat you, or she doesn't treat you the way she should treat you, and you're now hardwiring your brain to say, well, that's okay. And that's okay. And this is my response to it, is to go back into this or to do that. And, you know, I think we have to take really charge of these things and say, I need to be aware of what's happening, the neuroscience of what's happening, the hormone science of what's happening, and make sure I'm using that to my benefit, not to my detriment.
Absolutely. So here are some of the questions coming up. I am having a hard time not having sex. What can I do? For married couples, are there any boundaries?
Yes.
What can you do with the marriage? Yes, thank you. And you know what? I just have to throw this out there. You're going to Google this, and there's some really poor, poor souls who have written things on Catholic media that are wrong. Oh. And so I just want you to know that.
My friend sent me a tweet from someone who's calling himself Brother Somebody. And he said, all sex is sinful. And this was what he said, sex inside marriage is still sin, but it's venial.
Oh, dear.
And I was like, oh, brother, John Paul II would disagree with you. But he was, again, so you can have misinformed to the very liberal, oh, do what you want. And you can have misinformed to the, you should never even have any physical contact unless you're at that time trying to create a baby. And that's not the church's teaching either. And so I think you're absolutely right. There's some terrible stuff on the webs.
And I actually was looking at the terrible stuff in the opposite direction as well, saying that there are no boundaries whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's both.
And I just can't believe it. So we're going to get to those. But I want to start with this first one. This question comes from Nicole Her L, and she says, hello, I'm a daily listener to your radio show, and I really like you guys talking about sex. She says, what should I do if I keep falling into temptation? How do I restart my journey to being a good Christian? It is harder than what I thought. And she ends up feeling disgusted, useless, immoral every time. She feels like she's getting a standard of being in a relationship with God and then falls yet again.
Yeah. Man, that's so tough. I want to deal with that disgusted, useless, immoral. I mean, there is a good thing to feeling the weight of sin, right? That's true. Feeling guilt is not bad. However, you are not your sin. You are not disgusting. You are not useless. You are not immoral. And action can be, but there's always the reality is we run back to reconciliation. We run back to the Father's forgiveness because he affirms who we truly are. You're precious. You're valuable. You're mine. You're my beloved. And you are a revelation of me. I've literally written a revelation of myself into you. And that's where we move forward into our struggle for holiness is not trying to cover up something terrible that we are, but letting who we are be revealed more fully, right? And again, that's the difference between, I'd say, Lutheran theology and Catholic theology. You're not a pile of poo covered with snow. You're snow that gets covered with poo, right? And we're trying to reveal that, God revealed that. But yeah, how do you, it is hard. Let's acknowledge it. It's hard. The struggle for purity, particularly when you've fallen into habits of promiscuity or not, promiscuity sounds so negative. You maybe didn't realize, right? You didn't realize that these things weren't okay. I know my own personal story. There was stuff when I started dating that I didn't even know was a thing that all of a sudden I was involved in. And I wasn't prepared for it. Maybe you found yourself there. I think acknowledging it's difficult. It's okay to say it's hard. Mm-hmm. I actually heard Rick Warren say this one time about addiction. It basically that, the fall is part of recovery. Relapse is part of recovery. And I don't want to say that to excuse the relapse, like I keep falling into sin, but to acknowledge the fact that you are on a road to recovery. If you didn't need grace, if it wasn't a struggle, Jesus would not have had to die on the cross, right? The Holy Spirit would not have had to come to live and to be part of our life. So I think acknowledging it's hard and then setting yourself up for success too. I joked around with our teens at our parish, if you find yourself horizontal, you're in a problem situation, right?
Yeah.
If someone says, hey, let's go watch a movie back at my house, that's code for let's go make out on the couch for an hour, right? That's a problem, right? And so what are the situations, where are you falling into those situations? And then put up some parameters to keep yourself out of those situations of temptation.
Al, I'm just going to throw this out there. So, a great example, you end up horizontal, you're in trouble. But also, I think once it becomes later in the evening, things become more difficult, especially if you're alone, right? People begin to get tired, the attitude, the posture changes. So I always say, have a curfew for yourself.
Totally.
I know everyone's like, oh, are you saying that I can't hang out? Well, maybe if you're with people, yeah, you can hang out later. But if not, why make things more challenging?
Right.
You have all the daytime hours. Hang out at 7 o'clock in the morning when it's bright outside. Trust me, I'm sure your chastity will be much easier at that hour.
Yeah, 5 a.m. Hey, you want to go run 5 a.m.? Chastity. I would also say, too, if you're a young adult in this situation, and a lot of, young adults are dealing with that, finding a spouse, trying to be chaste, dating relationships where everybody's doing everything, I would say don't go out for drinks. Right. Hey, you want to go out for drinks? There's a reason that we call it the social lubricant. Alcohol inhibits what happens. And the way alcohol works is what it does is, and most people don't even understand this, alcohol, it focuses you on on kind of one carnal thing. It helps you really kind of filter out all of the extraneous information, and they get really focused on one thing. And typically it's something very carnal. So that's why they're angry drunks. They're horny drunks. They're happy drunks, right? And so if you're on a date and it's a romantic thing and now you have a couple drinks, well, now that becomes really very present.
And the boundaries quickly begin to go away with not just your speech and what you're willing to talk about, but how you're interacting, the physical cues you're giving to one another.
Absolutely.
That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmery Millington. You are listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. Talking about those sexual boundaries, so, you know, curfew boundaries, not drinking together necessarily, you know, being really aware of these areas, you know, and I also think it's important, we've got to name it out loud and we've got to talk to people about it. So, Elle, you took a great first step in saying it out loud, sharing it with someone. I want to encourage anyone who's struggling, talk to someone who you interact with daily so that you can have that dialogue. I was actually just at an Audrey Sod event last evening, and she's someone who struggled with pornography at times, and she is an incredible musician, and she was talking about how she finally got the courage after years to speak up about the fact that she was experiencing a pornography addiction and masturbation. Well, she tells three of her friends. All three of those friends were struggling with the exact same thing. And so naming it out loud helped her to claim it and start that journey of accountability, going to confession, you know, making these efforts. You've got to get that help, and we can't beat around the bush about it.
Right. I mean, there's no point in the gospel where we're just supposed to be alone. You know, I mean, go to a private place and pray. Absolutely. But we're three or more gathering my name, two or more gathering my name. We need community. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't a single person sport. I would say also with the naming it too, when you're dating someone and getting to know someone, I think it's very clear, easy. It's okay. Maybe not the first thing you say to them, but I just want you to understand as we get to know each other that this is where I am regarding my chastity. And that doesn't mean that we can't have fun. It doesn't mean I'm like this terrible prude, but I mean, this is my line. And I want you to respect that. And again, if someone challenges the line, you might say, hey, I know this is different and it's not normal, but this is my line. If you respect me, respect that. I think you get one challenge, maybe two challenges, and then sorry, we're out because you don't respect me.
Yes.
You're not looking for me. You're looking for that. And you know.
Right. And maybe you're in a relationship. I think I saw this question recently where you're trying really hard. You're trying to remain chaste, but the other person's not there. You guys are struggling. What do I do when I'm in that relationship? Well, you end it. If it's someone you care about, maybe down the road, there's a possibility. Maybe you guys both get help, because what happens is you also have a habit, a bad habit. You also have damage that's been done to you in many ways. And so you need to get control, develop a good virtue. You need to really work, and maybe limited friendship is possible, but both of you need to work on that healing journey. And that includes the sacraments. That includes good friendships. That includes reading, you know, Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love by Ed Sarai is a fantastic book, I would say, for anyone college on up, for married couples. It is a fantastic book. It's really working off of John Paul II. John Paul II is Carol Votila's Love and Responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great recommendation.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd say, you know, you keep falling. Don't let the devil keep you down. And the greatest lie the devil wants to tell us is that our sin doesn't have any importance. And then once we commit it, that it can never be forgiven. Your sin can always be forgiven. You can always run back. You are not your sin. You're not the fall. You're not poo covered with snow. You're snow covered with poo, and get the poo off. Go to confession. But then also be clear about what you want, about what you're living for. Don't compromise with that. And if someone's not willing to respect that, then they're not the person you should be spending that time with. And that's hard. I get it. There's that ache of, I just want someone in my life. I want to find this. We're living in such a weird time right now. But I just, again, people will treat you the way you expect to be treated.
Well, and that ends, we're kind of ending this specific topic, that really matters with how you stand and with what you wear. Modesty impacts it. What messages are you signaling, both in your posture, right, of how you're leaning or not leaning, the way you are looking at people, but also really, what are you wearing and what does that send? What message does that send? And maybe because you struggle with chastity, maybe you need to be more modest for a little while to help yourself remind yourself of the interior beauty, right, and the interior respect that that beauty demands first from yourself.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I said it again, absolutely. It's very true. we live in such a weird culture that we definitely have to, that modest thing might be hard, but you can do it.
Absolutely. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmy Millington. You were listening to Trending. Next question we want to hit on is, okay, you're married. No one ever talks about this. What is licit? What is doable? What is not doable? What is okay in the eyes of the church?
This is going to be a hard stop for some people. But the reality is that there is chastity in marriage too. And I'll tell you what, like, we've got six kids. We're not actively trying to have any more children. In fact, we're actively trying not to have any more children at this point.
Much to your dismay.
Well, it's, you know, so natural family planning has come into our life in a more real way.
Embrace the cross.
And so what does the church teach about sex, right? Well, sex is, it's given to us. It's a bond between man and wife, right? So that, and that's very important. If we don't understand that that's what's given for, to bond two people. And the church taught this before we understood the neuroscience, right? I love that.
Yes.
The church understood the power of these actions to bond two people, but well before science caught up. So it bonds a man and a wife, and it does. It's undeniable. It's scientifically fact. It makes life.
Yeah.
Right? And that's very true. I mean, sex makes babies. If that is not your conception of sex, then you don't understand what it is. If you are just trying to make babies, then it's utilitarian and you've demeaned this sacred act. If you're just using it to bond or for enjoyment, then you've demeaned this, you've profaned this sacred act. The totality of those two things, it protects the humanity of the individuals involved. So you don't become an object of someone else's pleasure and they don't become an object of your pleasure purely. You know, it's a total self-giving. And so sex inside of marriage respects that total giving of self. So it has to be open to life and it has to be between a man and a wife. And I'm going to say the third part, now the church doesn't really, it should be enjoyable. If it's not enjoyable, you're doing it wrong and should stop.
But that's where the church is saying that.
Yeah,
just summarizing different words, unitive for the good of the
right.
spouses.
Oh, totally.
So you should.
Totally.
So it is saying it. It's
right.
Unitive, it's good, it's enjoyable, it's procreative, it can have children, and it's marital. It has to be in marriage.
Right.
That's all sex. So when we're talking about sex, we're actually answering the question of sex across the board. So it doesn't matter if you're married, this is relevant to you.
Right.
If you're not married, you don't get none.
Well, what it means, though, and this is where I think it's very difficult inside of marriage. I would say chastity in marriage is sometimes harder than chastity outside of marriage, is if you're not trying to conceive or not at this point ready to welcome a child into your marriage, then you abstain. Mm-hmm. And again, the church, natural family planning, you know, the church has said that you can use the natural cycle of a woman to try to limit birth. And there are some great methods of natural family planning out there, but there's not one of them that doesn't require self-control. There's not one of them that doesn't require some self-denial.
So let's get into this a little more bluntly.
Sure.
Genital to genital is what is acceptable. To be very frank, that means no anal sex. That is not genital to genital. And that means no oral sex.
Right. The sodomy is a whole nother story. Openness to life. So when you're being with your spouse, you can be with each other and you can be, you've put me in a weird situation.
Okay,
where
I can't explain it. So I think we're going
to
disagree.
You're allowed to
here.
Kiss any part of a person you want to. However, it cannot be an end in and of itself.
Okay, I had a feeling we're going to end up disagreeing.
Sure. Yeah.
No, because that's not you. So what it's referred to in Catholic teaching is that would be considered foreplay,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
Leading up to the ultimate act
right.
of completed sexual act. So some people have the view that you can do anything
right.
as long as it ends in actual completed sexual intercourse.
Right.
However, that's not, we're going to end up disagreeing here and that's
agree to
fine.
Disagree, right.
We're going to agree to disagree, but
yep.
with that idea that is taking the attitude that the ends justify the means.
No, I think it's taking, I would disagree because again, it's the openness to life. Again, if you're just doing this as a way to prevent life, it's not, you know, if it's part of the total act of the evening, but then you could say, well, then can you kiss a person's neck? You know? Can you kiss a person's shoulder?
Well, that's
you would
what
say, no, you can't because it's not open to life, right?
No,
but I derive pleasure from that just as much.
But we're talking about body right. parts and we have to respect where the body parts are oriented toward one another.
Sure.
And anal and oral sex are not open to life.
Well, I'm
life,
not arguing for, acts. You know, sodomy. Again, that's specifically forbidden, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So anyway, I think we can agree to disagree on that one. And if you can cite me something, I'd be happy to take a look at it. But looking in the study that I've done, and trust me, I've done the study, I don't see that it's not written.
We've got 25 seconds
sure.
coming up here. I think we're going to agree to disagree. I see how sure. the unitive and procreative together that is what is required for those regions of the body and that out of respect for those regions of the body. We're going to come up with more questions, tough questions about sex coming up later in the show. And we're going to talk a little bit about the sex abuse scandal that's taking place in the church, especially getting Chris's thoughts here.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at C. Mueller Tweets, spelled M-U-E-L-L-E-R, and at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So this summer, I was traveling all over the country and super busy. I mean, I think I had something like 20 flights last month, which was crazy. I talked to over 7,000 people. And so I was busy. I mean, I didn't know what time zone I was in half the time. But some stuff happened when I was away from the show. And I know we've talked about it on the show. And I was kind of slow to catch up. I mean, there was some news about Cardinal McCarrick, a powerful man in the church, and the abuse of his position. In particular, and abusing his position in such a way as to, I would say, deter young men from pursuing a vocation, and then taking advantage of vulnerable young men pursuing vocation as well, and just his influence in the church. And that had came out, and I was lightly upset about it because I wasn't really fully reading it completely, and I was so busy. And then a couple weeks after, we have these revelations of what the Pittsburgh grand jury. And, you know, just the horrific acts that had been perpetrated by men in the church upon children, upon vulnerable adults, and the knowledge that the church had and the cover-ups that followed. And I got to tell you, I just was so upset and angry about it. And I don't think I'm alone. You know, at Mass on Sunday, we had a letter from the bishop, and the homily dealt with this, and I would say the homily dealt with it rather poorly, to be honest. But the level of silence at times, particularly following the homily and following this letter, this is affecting the body of Christ in a way that I cannot be denied. It's definitely hurting us as a church. And so what's the response? You know, what is our response to this? Anger, I think, is completely valid. You know, it's funny. Sometimes as a Catholic, we tend to look at Jesus and we stop seeing the humanity of Jesus Christ. But the church tells us that God is fully human, fully God. And Jesus demonstrates a righteous anger when he chases the money changers out of the church, right? And so on the part of a lay person, I think we can be imitators in Christ and be righteously angry at this point. Now, again, the Cardinal McCarrick thing honestly upsets me a little bit more than Pittsburgh, because what we see from Pittsburgh is that from 2002 on, the church really implemented policies. And there, I think there was one reported case, not Pittsburgh, but in Pennsylvania, one reported case after 2002. After the scandal initially broke, the church made some changes, and it looks like those were effective and the church is living it out. Now, there was cover-ups. There are bishops who did cover-ups are still in place. I think that needs to be weeded out. The McCarrick thing, I think, speaks to if you were involved in any of this or aware of any of this, you need to step down. If you were moving priests from place to place who had been abusers, or you were involved in abuse yourself, you need to step down. I think we can say that. But what I find very interesting, and I'm kind of monologuing here, so just bear with me, is at the same time all of this has been going on, as a church, we've been traveling through John chapter 6. If you've been paying attention on Sundays, we've been in the 6th chapter of John, which is known as the Bread of Life discourse, where Jesus begins to say, you know, I'm the bread of life come down from heaven. Unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life within you. For my flesh is true food, my blood is true drink. I mean, he says it repeatedly. And this Sunday, we get to John chapter 6, where many of the disciples leave. And it's funny, because I've said to my wife throughout this scandal, you know, I was in the airport in Philadelphia, or probably not Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, when the grand jury report came out. I was wearing my everyday Catholic t-shirt, and I was feeling very self-conscious.
You told me that. You actually didn't know at first.
I didn't really know. I was not aware of that this had broke, because again, I've been super busy. And I've said to my wife, like, I've had a real hard time being Catholic the last couple of days, just because I am so angry. And my wife says, I'm angry too, but where else would we go? And she says this, you know, because I believe in the Eucharist, because I believe in the revelation that God's been given through the church. And you know, you can make all the arguments for the terrible leadership we've had over the centuries and how the teaching remains true. But then those words, my wife's words of where would we go, St. Peter then in this week's gospel says, Jesus turns to him and says, are you going to leave too? Right after he's done this whole teaching on the bread of life, are you going to leave too? And Peter says, well, where would we go? You have the words of eternal life. And I think for a lot of Catholics and myself included, I look at the church and I say, I can't find God in the sacraments anywhere else but here. Mm-hmm. I can't find Jesus in the Eucharist this way anywhere else but here. Now you can make the argument for the Orthodox Church, but...
If you choose the Orthodox Church, you Catholics right. know better. And so that's not...
Right, exactly. Possible. You can't. I mean, but what I'm saying is, I want to hear that preached this Sunday. I want to hear... The gift we have in the Eucharist preached, and I don't want someone to. So this is where my real frustration is, and we've voiced this. I'm just trying to catch up with you guys out there listening, because I know some of you are in the same place I'm at. I don't think it's okay to generalize the language. I heard this in a letter from a bishop. When we abuse, when we do this, well, I'm sorry, we didn't. And granted, there's abuse outside of the church too. In fact, most studies will show that one of the safest places you can be is in the church, because the incidence is much lower than it is, say, at a school or athletics or all of those things.
Doesn't make it get acceptable.
It's not acceptable at all. And what makes it completely unacceptable is a cover-up,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
But I want to hear this preached, that we have this gift in the Eucharist, and We don't cover this stuff up. We can't abuse people of God because of this, but because of this, we need to go and we need to eradicate this. And so what do we do as everyday Catholics? I've heard people say, well, don't write checks to your parish anymore. You know, as a youth minister who depended on the support of tithing parishioners, I wouldn't say that.
I'm going to actually just throw something in there. Yeah. I actually, and I've thought about and prayed about saying this on air, I'm going to support not directing money to your parish, but if you trust your priest, write the check directly to your priest.
And
if it goes directly to your priest,
I've heard that
he can take the funds within the church and it won't go to the diocese.
I would talk to your priest before you ever do anything about that, because I think you put a tremendous temptation in the life of someone when you're writing personal checks. And then also, can he pay payroll out of his personal checks? He can't. He has to then donate, he has to put it in the church's funds, because if you commingle, that's a tremendous violation, right? And so he can't pay his staff members with his own personal funds. Now, he could give a gift to them, but that the limit of what you can give gift, whether before you have tax ramifications, is pretty small. So how do you do that? It's a tough thing. Yeah, you're right. We give her money. Now, if you don't have anything going on in your parish that you're supporting, your programs, I mean, could you write a check specifically to your youth minister for his housing? That'd be great. Awesome. Whatever. But that blanket of, we're just going to stop supporting the church. You know, we've got a food pantry that feeds thousands of families. I'm going to continue to support that.
Well, maybe you go and ask Father, what do you need that I can give you or I can pay for myself? That's
sure.
Another solution. That way you don't have those funds.
But the secretary needs to get paid. You know
right.
what I mean? And so that's a bind we're in, right? And so I think we as Catholics, we continue, right? We don't, maybe don't, you know, again, and we say bishops, well, the bishops need to do this. You know what? We're here in Orange County, OC Catholic Radio, a fantastic shepherd here in Orange County who was just appointed to this diocese. Any skeletons in the closet here in Orange County, he has nothing to do with, yet he has to carry this on his shoulders. Some of you have fantastic bishops. So what I would say is, if you've got a bishop, call them and love them and pray for them. You know, your parish priest, call them and love them and pray for them.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, the church needs to open our books and we need to be able to see that we can trust these
Absolutely.
Men again.
I want to just jump in here for a second. You know, the letters that have come out across the country, I just have to say, and especially anyone in there, how dare they read those during Mass when there are young children present? I was sitting in Mass in San Bernardino Diocese this week, and little kids were hearing the word sex and abuse thrown around, and these kids are looking up at their parents. How dare they be read in Mass? Because you know what? I was one of those kids who heard in church about sex abuse, not from my parents, but from not even the homilies, but another letter read every few months up at the pulpit. And I think that there's really a boundary that needs to be had. And so I'm hearing from a lot of people who are angry about that. You are not alone there.
Yeah, it's such a hard thing too, because I know our bishops want to be shepherds to their people. How do they effectively communicate it? And, you know, is a letter in the bulletin? Maybe that would be more effective, I think. You know, my own personal experience in the church, when I went to work in the church in the early 2000s, the scandal broke and my pastor was removed. Now, he'd been serving in ministry for 20 years after he'd had a same-sex relationship with a young man, and I don't know the full details of it. You know, I mean, I would say it categorizes as a rape situation because the young man was too young. That the associate pastor of that parish has been removed recently because he engaged in a heterosexual sexual relationship with someone he'd known since she was a 7-year-old. The next person they put in at that parish is now a married man living in the desert with his wife because he couldn't live in a celibate lifestyle. The person that followed him up had to go into counseling because he would chase the associate out into the street yelling at him in the evenings. And so you say, well, gosh, Chris, not every priest is bad. No, I know they're not. I know some fantastic priests, but I do think there's been some abuse that trust needs to be restored. And that I think what most Catholics hear with the report out of Pennsylvania, it causes them to go, oh my gosh, what's happening in my diocese.
Right.
And that's where I say good bishops, good priests, we need to open those files so that people can see who good priests are, so they can have no doubt. So they can have, and you say, well, they shouldn't be able to doubt. And there's a priest who I know in San Diego who I would have said, oh, this guy was a great guy. And he's been prosecuted for rape. And so you go like, as a faithful man, I'm just struggling right now. Like, help me to have faith in the men and who are leading the church.
So I think that the good news here is that there are bishops who are speaking out, but the revival can't just come from the bishops. I did appreciate Bishop Robert Morlino from the Diocese of Madison, who said, we're talking about deviant sex, almost exclusively homosexual acts by clerics. And he's saying, we need to deal with the fact that there's rampant, essentially, homosexuality taking place within the higher ranking realms of the Catholic Church, and we need to call it for what it is. That being said, you guys, there are many of us in the church who are saying, no, the church is not defined just by the sin taking place. And you guys have to keep hope in that. And remember that question, where else would we go?
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
I just want to remember that transitioning out of the sex abuse crisis, we really need to pray for the victims of sexual abuse. I'm not hearing enough said of them, and I just want you guys to know that my heart and my prayers are with you, and the long-term damage that has taken place, I can't imagine what that is like for you. But standing today in the church, the coward's way out, as I heard someone say, I think it was my mom that said it this weekend, the coward's way out is to leave the church. We have the fullness of the truth. We have the fullness of truth. We are called to sanctity. And I just think of John Paul II, St. John Paul II, in the fact that he believed we could be saints. And what the gospel is all about is the fact that the kingdom of heaven is here right now. And we are called to live that kingdom and fight to be walking, breathing saints now. Not to say, oh, I hope I get to purgatory. No, we want to go to heaven. And that needs to be our focus. And that's why we're talking about some of the tough sexual topics today that we are. So I want to transition here. We have some great questions, especially surrounding sexuality. And, you know, we talked earlier about the question of how far is too far, but you've heard some really great questions this summer, Chris.
Yeah. So one of the things we did with Franciscan University this summer at our conferences, and you know, if you're not familiar with Franciscan youth conferences, over 60,000 teens across the United States and Canada attend these conferences each summer. We did a workshop in the afternoon on relationships, and it was relationships with, you know, your parents are relationship, your friends are relationships, and romantic relationships all there. And then we gave the students an opportunity for a Q&A, and so they could tweet questions to the host of the weekend, and then we did a kind of a panel discussion. It was a lot of fun, and we had a lot of feedback from young people saying, we want to do more of this. A lot of questions. I mean, I think if there's one thing that we can say for sure about young people is they have a lot of questions. They're truth seekers. They really are truth seekers. And I think most of us are in that position too.
Absolutely. So one of the questions here that stood out to me is that basically based off of some of what's going on in the church, a lot of people, especially young people, end up having this attitude, well, does the church hate sex? And I hope that based on this conversation so far, you've gotten that the church does not hate sex. The church respects sexuality. And we talk even about a difficult area of sexuality that we disagree on. And just to clarify, you know, kissing the body is one thing, but I'm just talking about genital-to-genital interaction there.
Right.
That being said, the church does uphold human sexuality as something that bonds two people and has a potential so great it creates another.
I remember Scott Hahn talking about this. And I tell you what, Dr. Hahn was such a huge influence on me in my 20s. But talking about the sacramental nature of marriage, right? And that sex, okay, so in marriage, grounds for an annulment is if the marriage is not consummated, if there's a refusal to consummate, to engage in the marital act, I'm using the terms, then that's a grounds for annulment. I mean, and so literally you're dealing with a sacramental action, right? This validates, in a sense, helps to validate a marriage. You know, so of course we don't hate sex. We it's a sacred act. We esteem sex. We hold it up for what it is, this truly beautiful thing. So yeah, absolutely. The church does not hate sex.
Another one of your favorite questions that you got this summer.
Favorite questions. Hold on. I just moved my window.
So we talked about how far is too far, but here's a great question. How can I leave a situation where my chastity is involved? So assuming that you're struggling to remain chaste, we touched on this a little bit, but I'd love to hear more of your thoughts. How do you leave that relationship?
How do you leave that relationship? Yeah.
I had suggested earlier, just kind of repeating, that you look at, well, maybe you do like that person. You set boundaries, both healing, you separate, right? You break up, but you have those healing boundaries of reconciliation. Maybe if you have an addiction, some form of seeing a therapist. These are things that need to take place to get good habits again.
Right. And so I think, you break up. Right. And what we're seeing in our culture is less and less dating and more hooking up. And we talked about that with the dating project, right? This idea that young people aren't dating. So you stop putting yourself in the position. How do you get out of a situation where chastity is involved? You stop putting yourself in a position where your chastity is involved. And so if there's a person in your life who you keep finding yourself in unchaste situations, you don't put yourself in that position. It sounds so cliche, but you go on group dates. You go out with a big group of people. I said this earlier, if you're with someone and they don't respect your choices, your chaste choices, you stop being with that person. You say goodbye. We're in this weird world where everybody holds on to their ex-girlfriends or boyfriends for the rest of their lives through Facebook or social media. You know what? No. I don't need to know what my ex-girlfriend is doing with their life. They're just not necessary. Oh, but we want to be friends afterward. Why? Yeah. Like, why?
It's very difficult to maintain just a friendship.
Well, and again, to what end? Again, if you're living chastely, I think you can absolutely be friends afterwards. And our young adult community at St. Martha's, we have a lot of people who dated each other and then got married, and now their families are friends and they're raising kids all in community. But they were chastely dating each other. And so then if you chastely dated someone and then you break up and they date someone else chastely, you're not, the emotional tear doesn't happen.
Right.
So it's much easier to move on and to be with each other.
But that's not what people want. People want to date, and then they want to, after they date, to be each other's best friends,
right?
But they didn't have a chaste relationship, or even fully chaste, should I say, because as we talked about at the beginning, a lot of people think everything but sex is okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'd say, you know, how can I leave a situation where my chastity is involved? I would say you just leave. But again, if you find yourself in that situation over and over and over again, then you need to do the soul work of saying, God, why? What's the hunger in myself I'm trying to fill? Where's the wound I'm looking for healing in? And that might require some talk with a counselor.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to recommend too, if you've had a long period of truly, ultimately it is self-harm and harm of others in sexually active relationships like that, take a period of time to regroup and not date and not be in that circumstance. Allow your heart and your mind and your body to heal. I think that that's really important. That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmery Millington. This is Trending. If you'd like to hear more of Trending, you can go to radiotrending.com. Your network might only carry one of those shows, and we are producing 2 a week. So we've been talking a lot about issues having to do with respect and helping to understand how respect is important for a man, just like love is important for women, and how many ways men see the two as the same thing. So we've been talking about those this week, just not on this show. So check out radiotrending.com. Another question that I saw come up was, if you have sex before marriage, can you still be a priest or a nun?
I don't run a seminary currently. However, my understanding is yes, because there's confession, there's reconciliation, there's freedom, there's forgiveness. I think we're learning in the church, however, if you haven't dealt with that, no. Does that make sense?
And like that line needs to be drawn a little bit better if that's something you struggle with. If you are now not a chaste person going into the seminary, you should not be trying to live that vocation until you've gone through that proper healing pain.
Absolutely. You know, I heard someone say, if you haven't been fully supporting yourself, taking care of yourself, responsible for your bills, your homework, that stuff for 6 months, you have no business going to college. And I loved that because you're not ready for it. If you haven't been living a chaste life for years, a number of years, then you have no reason to expect you would magically enter seminary or a convent and suddenly you would be chaste.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. And those demons, literal demons, are not going to get quieter. They're going to get louder because you've now put yourself in a position where you are declaring war in a new way upon the enemy, and he has everything to see you fail.
Well, and that's like saying, you know, I struggle with fidelity. So should I still get married even though I'm struggling with being faithful? You know, if it's at that level, no, you should not be going into seminary. You should be working on that. But if that was your past, if you have healed from that, yes, of course, there's that open invitation in still talking to the proper people about this journey as well.
Right.
I want to jump into one more question before we head out. And that is a dear listener from Australia. She's a mother of four. And she shared that her 8-year-old daughter is dancing now. And she's like, Timory, you know, you have expertise in having grown up dancing. And she actually shared that her 8-year-old daughter's struggling a little bit with the costume. And I want to get your thoughts on this because you've also been in theater as well. So here are my thoughts. The problem is she said, my daughter's feeling uncomfortable. She really wants to dance, jazz, ballet, etc. But she was uncomfortable with her stomach showing in a recent dance and also with a backless outfit.
Yeah.
There's a tough boundary. I can tell you that for the most part, I was very blessed that majority of the costumes that I wore most of the time were pretty good. I would can say one of the last costumes I performed in, I kind of hit a wall going, ooh, this was too far. It wasn't what it was supposed to be. And it was a wake-up call for me in many ways. But there were times where I, for example, performed Polynesian dancing. And Polynesian has, you know, the big skirt and you're wearing like a bikini-esque type of top. So there are tough periods of time. And I think that you don't have to shut the door on dance, but you do have to have boundaries. And if certain teachers can't respect those boundaries, that's when you either have to transition studios to somewhere that's more family friendly.
Exactly. Not every studio is the right studio.
Exactly. And there are a lot that want to be family friendly.
Oh, absolutely.
And the ones that don't want to, I say don't go there. And, you know, personally, I think especially if you've got, you know, little girls and they're insisting on having all their belly showing. Well, we always had to wear what was called a naked, and it was a leotard that was nude color. So your belly wasn't showing. You had a naked showing.
Well, you might talk to the instructor and say, hey, can she wear just a flesh colored, you know, leotard underneath this?
Right.
You know? But I think this is with club, sports, dance, a lot of things. Parents, be the parents. Be the parents.
Yeah.
And if your kids in a situation where they're uncomfortable because they're being overly sexualized, say in dance, and they're saying, I don't know, I'm not comfortable with this, then you absolutely get behind them and say, you're right, we're done.
And I can go That's into okay. this a little more clearly as well, because we don't have a lot of time here. But I would say, you know, allowing for the dance to take place and depending on how they're dancing as well, maybe you do allow for a certain costume, but then the dancing's acceptable. But if the dancing begins to go far, then you need to change your trajectory, because I don't think it's always going to be easy with dance. And so that's where the costume may not be the best, but the dance is okay. I would say that's probably okay. You know, at a certain point, you need to have your boundaries just within sex. And I think that's where we'll end it here. More thoughts to come on the next episode of Trending.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timory. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timory.com.